6:52, you're listening to KW Magazine on FM 98.5 CKWR. Very good evening to you. I'm John Maceo. Still to come in the program, we'll take a look at the man who built the Yankee Empire, George Steinbrenner, with a chat with author Peter Golenbach. But up next, picking up on that track by the Beatles, we're pleased to be joined on the telephone by Jason Brown. He is the author of Our Days Are Numbered, How Mathematics Orders Our Lives. It is published by McClelland and Stewart. Jason, how you doing?
Good. How are you, John?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking the time. Folks might be wondering, why in God's name is John playing that track by the Beatles? But certainly there is a significance to that track, and we'll talk about it in a minute. Without a doubt, you are a Beatles fan.
Without a doubt, I am. For a long time.
And that song, Hard Day's Night, particularly the starting a note of that song, is something that you're very familiar with.
It is. Ever since I started learning guitar, which I decided to learn because I heard a Beatles record, I've been playing along with their songs. And there is no chord, I think, in rock and roll that's as memorable as that opening chord of Hard Day's Night. And I had tried to play it over the years in different ways and tried to look at different transcriptions and different books, and none of the books seemed to agree. And so I felt that there had to be a scientific explanation of how the chord was played.
Now, what is the connection between mathematics, if you will, and music? And certainly in your book, you tie a lot of connections between everyday things, including music, but specifically in this case, for example, of this track, but generally speaking, in terms of music, what is the connection?
Well, music is made up of pure tones, and each pure tone is modeled by those sine curves that we learned back in high school, mm-hmm. that wobble back and forth. And each chord that's played is made up of sums of those kinds of sine curves, going at various speeds and at various loudnesses. And so we naturally hear that combination, and our ears can actually, to some extent, decipher the mess of sound that comes in when we hear chords and music being played into its individual parts. But we're only so good at doing that. So there is mathematics that explains how to decipher a complex chord into its constituent frequencies. And that's called a Fourier transform. And that was the basis on which I tried to uncover how that mysterious chord was played.
Now, when we talk about that mysterious chord, there's a reason, I guess, and you found that out, why no one had been able to replicate, including yourself, that first chord of that that Beatles song, A Hard Day's Night.
Well, that's right, because it's been claimed to be a great guitar chord played by George Harrison on his 12-string Rickenbacker guitar, but it's not. And what the mathematics uncovered was that it certainly wasn't just George playing it on his 12-string guitar, but it was more than the Beatles. There was a piano in the mix, and the piano the piano part was definitely chosen to insert certain notes that weren't being played by the other musicians, and it was mixed in perfectly. You can tell from the mathematics to blend in with the chiming guitar sound, and hence the mysteriousness of the chord.
In the book, you talk about, and I believe I'm going from memory here, but am I accurate, 29,000 frequencies in that particular chord?
That's right. That's approximately the number. The thing is that when you play a note on a guitar, you not only get the original note, which is called the fundamental, but the physics of how stringed instruments work insists that there be multiples of that original frequency. So twice the frequency, three times the frequency, at various loudnesses. So not only do you get the original tone, but you get many other tones, and you would get them from all the instruments, and you would also get other frequencies that would come from anything that rattled in the room. So that's why you get so many frequencies there, and plus there might be a little bit of noise that would add some frequencies as well. So that's why you get that huge number to deal with, but you can also tell the relative loudnesses of the frequencies, and that's where you can begin to make some mathematical deductions.
You're listening to KW Magazine on FM 98.5 CKWR. Jason Brown, who's a Dalhousie University mathematics professor, and as you now know, a Beatles fan, and the author of Our Days Are Numbered, How Mathematics Orders Our Lives, is our guest. There's no denying the fact, and certainly once you read your book, Jason, there's no denying the fact that from the moment we get up and our feet hit the floor in the morning until our heads hit the pillow in the evening, we're surrounded by numbers. Numbers are everywhere. Yet, I think I can probably safely say and that I'm probably not any different than most. Most of us go through the day, in effect, completely oblivious and unaware of the mathematics that shapes our lives. In a way, I guess mathematics are the Rodney Dangerfield of sciences. Is that safe to say?
It gets no respect.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think it is. You know, to the extent that other sciences have traditionally been acceptable and cool and interesting, and math has had an uphill battle. And it goes back, you know, quite a ways that, you know, as I describe in the book, that if I tell people I'm a mathematician, the usual response is, oh, I've always hated mathematics. And they don't say that about other things, but they say it with relish about mathematics. And but it shouldn't be that way, because the people who really do mathematics do it because it's a wonderful creative process, and the world is their oyster. The mathematical oyster. And if you can see mathematics in your daily life, I promise you will find things more interesting and you'll be more creative.
Now, on that subject of creativity, you argue in the book that, in fact, mathematics has lost some of that creativity, some of that that shine, if you will, in recent times, compared to the way it was viewed, you know, many years ago. Why do you think that is?
Back a long time ago, you know, well, back in the ancient to the ancient Greeks, mathematics was one of the five pillars of a proper education. And, you know, even back a few hundred years ago, you had people doing research in mathematics who weren't mathematicians by trade. They were lawyers, clergymen, accountants, you know, they'd be from a wide variety of professions. But I think somehow in the 1900s especially, mathematics became relegated primarily to people who only studied mathematics, and it became a useful tool as opposed to something that every well-educated person should learn and should learn throughout their life. And so I think the tide is beginning to change. There's been a number of movies about mathematicians where they're interesting, a little bit crazy, but interesting. You know, there's the show Numbers on TV that's had quite an audience attraction. And so I think people are beginning to see a little bit of how mathematicians and mathematics are interesting. And this is what I want to tell people.
Well, I can tell you in reading your book, I now have a completely different perspective on you know, everyday things in terms of mathematics and how numbers influence everything pretty much that we do on a daily basis. One of the fascinating topics that you discuss in your book is this whole notion of 6 degrees of separation. Perhaps you can delve into that a little bit and tell us how mathematics plays a role in that notion.
Well, you would think with the world having, I don't know, 7 billion people or so, that, you know, if you wanted to connect yourself to another random person in the world, you would have to go through many people. There would be a long chain of people to connect you up to any given person. It was found by doing an experiment that it seems that every two people in the world are joined by a chain of people of a length at most 6. That is, you may not know that person directly that you're trying to reach, say, in Japan, but you will find someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows someone who knows that person in some sort of chain like that, and the chain will be short. And so this is the 6 degrees of separation. And it seems wildly fantastic. I mean, how can you connect yourself up to someone in Japan when you may not know anyone in Japan, you think? But the thing is that, you know, if you look at the mathematics of it, it doesn't seem as surprising, because if you say you know 300 people, and those 300 people each know 300 more people, well, all of a sudden, in two steps, you know 90,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows very quickly. So it's not beyond reason that within six steps, you could know everyone in the world. It doesn't mean that you do, but you could. And so, you know, if you recognize this principle of 6 degrees of separation, you can realize that if you're sitting next to someone on the airplane, you can talk to them a little bit, and you will likely find a short connection to them. And you can do this, you know, whether you're just sitting with someone on the airplane or you're taking a new client out to dinner that's maybe from halfway across the world. You can look for these connections, and it will make you and the other person feel closer to one another. But it's a mathematical principle.
You spent some 3 to 4 years of your life trying to come to grips with that first chord, 1 second, if you will, or a couple of seconds of a hard day's night. But being a Beatles fan, you're going back for more, and I guess your next project is another Beatles song. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, actually, that original piece was in a number of places, including Guitar Player magazine, and I had another article where I found mathematical proof that in the same song, George Harrison's famous solo was recorded at half speed and then played back at full speed. And I've also looked at I Want to Hold Your Hand, which is, it's been another article about how the Beatles used mathematics to subconsciously write the bridge. But my current research, now I'm looking at music authentication. The question is, if you have a piece of music and you have a number of people who might have written it,
mm-hmm.
How do you decide between them? Who likely has written that piece? And it gets to the heart of how people do write music, how they write the chords and how they write the melodies. And in particular, I have this looming question. It's always a Beatles question, but the looming question is the song In My Life.
Fantastic song.
It's a fantastic song, a wonderful song. And after the Beatles broke up, Paul and John were interviewed individually about who wrote which songs. Because there's a myth that they wrote all the songs together because it said Lennon and McCartney. But often, one wrote all or almost all of the song. So there were a few songs where they truly collaborated on them. So they discussed all the songs, each of them, and they agreed on every song but one, In My Life. And Paul said he wrote the music. He doesn't deny that John wrote the words. They both agree on that. And John said, no, I wrote the music. And then he backed off a little bit. He says, well, Paul wrote, maybe he helped out with the middle eight in the middle, but I still wrote the music, most of the music. So I'm trying to look at that and just use it as, the entry point into looking into the research problem of music authentication. How to likely decide who wrote a piece of music.
Well, good luck with that project, and congratulations on the book. It's a fascinating look at how math impacts our lives.
Thank you very much, John.
Appreciate you sharing some time with us.
Pleasure.
Have a wonderful evening. Jason Brown is the author of Our Days Are Numbered, How Mathematics Orders Our Lives. He's a professor of mathematics in the Department of Mathematics and Statistics at Dalhousie University. You're with KW Magazine on FM 98.5 CKWR. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back with more right after this.